First, we continue our coverage of the ongoing situation in Ukraine. President Obama announced further sanctions against Russia this morning in response to the country's move to annex Ukraine's Crimea region.
But our next guest, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, wants the United States to go further and send military aid to Ukraine to maintain its border integrity and defend itself from further invasion.
Senator Johnson, welcome to the show.
Well, guys, how you doing?
Good. Well, let's start with some background. As a member of the Senate's Foreign Relations Committee, you were in Kiev recently. You met with Ukrainian government officials, protest leaders, and others. What did you learn from talking with the various groups there?
Well, first of all, it was a pretty sobering experience as you're meeting with the individuals you talked about, the prime minister, the acting president, pretty sober individuals, understanding that Vladimir Putin's goal, his eventual goal, wasn't just Crimea. It really was, in their words, Kiev. In other words, all of Ukraine and probably beyond that. Vladimir Putin has announced that, from his standpoint, the greatest geopolitical catastrophe was the breakup of the Soviet Union in the last century. And his aim is to reconstitute the Soviet Union. So nobody wants to return to the Cold War, but we have to recognize the reality that certainly the aggressive action that Vladimir Putin has taken sure has Cold War overturns or overtones to it. And we need to recognize that reality and not only talk tough, but we actually have to take some pretty firm measures. We have to demonstrate some real strength and resolve if we're going to deter Vladimir Putin from going further.
Well, Putin has said, I know there have been mixed messages, he has said, at least in one instance, nope, we're not interested in eastern Ukraine. You don't buy that?
He said that about Crimea. So, no, you cannot believe Vladimir Putin. It's foolish to believe a word that he said. He's former head of the KGB. He has absolutely got his mind set on reconstituting the Soviet Union, and he will take advantage of the West's weakness. He will take advantage of any opportunity to expand his influence and power. And we ignore that reality at our own peril.
As we mentioned, you, after this trip, said the United States should send some form of military aid to Ukraine. What do you have in mind?
Well, we should support the courageous action of the Ukrainian people. When Prime Minister Yatsenyuk was here in Washington, he asked pretty modest a request to provide his hollowed-out military. Now, they've got over 100,000 people in the military, but only 6,000 were combat-ready. And so they had a relatively simple request for some small arms and ammunition to give them some ability to defend themselves, which when we were there, the government officials were dedicated to defending Ukrainian territory. And, of course, because of the Budapest Memorandum, we are somewhat obliged to help them do just that. And so it was a pretty modest request. Regrettably, President Obama turned him down. What I suggested, maybe if we're not willing to provide them some small arms and ammunition, maybe we could at least send a military mission, not combat troops, but military experts to assess what Ukraine might need in terms of the short term to strengthen their military capabilities and also their long term. I think that would send a pretty strong signal to Vladimir Putin that we are going to help Ukraine defend its border integrity and, quite honestly, honor our commitments to NATO in terms of Lithuania and Latvia and Estonia as well.
Are you worried that there'd be a risk of this further escalating the crisis if there's any kind of military aid from the West there?
I'm concerned across the board. I mean, this is a very dangerous situation, but I believe it's riskier to allow Vladimir Putin to undertake this aggressive expansion with impunity. He never paid a price for his expansion into Georgia, and as a result, that emboldened him. And he'll strike when there's a moment of weakness, where there's a moment of opportunity. And if we don't show our willingness to act, if we don't show resolve, he'll continue this expansionary policy. And that's very destabilizing for the world, very destabilizing. So in the end, it is in the United States' best interest to make sure that we deter further aggression on the part of Vladimir Putin.
From an everyday American perspective, this is on the other side of the world. Ukraine is not a NATO ally. We're not under direct treaty obligation. Why should Americans be worried enough to want the United States to take some kind of action here?
Because we live in a global economy, and this level of instability is not good for our national security. It's not good for the global economy. If this continues, it's just a matter of time before NATO countries are threatened. And then you're talking about a much higher level commitment on part of the U.S. But again, remember, in exchange for giving up their nuclear weapons, Ukraine was given assurances that its border integrity would be maintained. Now, that's obviously gone out the window with one of the signatories of that memorandum. Russia has now invaded illegally Crimea. And so future countries that are considering giving up their nuclear capabilities or being deterred from acquiring a new nuclear capability will take a look at what's happening in Ukraine and come to their own conclusions, which is not good if you're interested in nuclear nonproliferation. So again, this has serious complications or consequences long term, and so we better do everything we can to honor those commitments we made to Ukraine when they gave up their nuclear weapons.
President Obama has announced some more economic sanctions today, targeting supporters of Putin, wealthy people in Putin's circle and in government leadership. Do you think that will be at all effective?
Well, the initial sanctions were so weak that they were mocked by the people they were targeting. They laughed at them, which isn't a good sign when you're trying to make them pay a price and they're laughing at you. I haven't been able to analyze exactly what's been done. We should be strengthening economic sanctions. By the way, that is a battle that Putin is sure to lose. In looking at the Ukraine, you have to really analyze the situation in terms of, you know, why does Vladimir Putin have the strength? Why does he have the confidence to do this? Well, he's primarily strong because of their oil and gas resources and the fact that Ukraine and Europe is dependent on those oil resources. So we need to weaken that power that Vladimir Putin has. We should open up world energy markets. We should certainly be willing to export, you know, our growing oil and gas resources. That would certainly weaken Vladimir Putin. The other thing that makes him strong is our own economic and international weakness that we've been demonstrating. We need to show greater strength, greater resolve. That also would weaken his hand.
Do you see any scenario where the United States would actually have military intervention of some sort, boots on the ground or air intervention, maybe a no-flight zone, anything like that in Ukraine, Crimea, or the area?
That is something that I think the Ukrainian government was requesting when we were there is a possibility. I think no-fly zones actually could be something that we can consider. It would send a pretty strong signal. You know, we are doing offering and participating in air patrols in the Baltic states, Estonia, Lithuania, and Latvia. And I think that can actually be pretty effective. So that could be one of those strong signals I think maybe the U.S. government should consider. I don't see combat boots on the ground at all, no.
A Putin appointee to the state-run media was reported as saying something to the effect of, United States, remember, we're the only country in the world that still has the nuclear capacity to reduce you to ashes. I'm paraphrasing a bit there. Do you worry about escalation to some kind of nuclear conflict?
I do worry about it, but I also pointed out when I was in Ukraine that there is one man that has escalated the situation. There's one man that if further blood is shed in Ukraine, that we need to hold responsible and hold accountable, and that's Vladimir Putin. This is really the action of one man that is destabilizing the region and that threatens greater escalation. It's not the United States, but the way we need to deter this, the only way we can expect de-escalation of the situation is to show the type of strength and resolve that we're currently not showing. In other words, peace through strength actually works. By showing weakness, you will increase the chances of the situation actually escalating and not de-escalating.
We're talking with U.S. Senator Ron Johnson about why he thinks the United States should send military aid to Ukraine. He stays with us after the news, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What would you like to see from the United States in regard to what's going on in Ukraine, Crimea, and Russia? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking with Senator Ron Johnson about the situation in Ukraine. He says we should send military aid to the country, help arm the Ukrainian army so they can have their full force available in case of, well, a worst-case scenario. What do you think? We're taking your questions and your comments at 800-642-1234. What's the right United States response? What Senator Johnson is saying? More economic sanctions? Nothing? 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers now, Senator Johnson. We've got Art on the line in Milwaukee. Art, hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Senator. I don't know if you're aware of the fact that the first George Bush, who had been the head of the CIA, by the way, assured the Soviet Union that if they dissolved the Warsaw Pact, that NATO would not move into former Warsaw Pact areas. And now I hear you saying that maybe we should have a no-fly zone over the Ukraine, which is, you know, right up to Russia and was the center of the Soviet Union. And so that promise was breached. And to say that there's one man, one man only, responsible for this, when you're talking about militarizing in the heart of a very powerful country that's very far away, I think it's very risky and not consistent with the traditional Republican views of trying to save money and protect our own interests.
All right, thanks for the call. Senator Johnson?
Well, Art, you know, appreciate the question and comment, but again, we did sign the Budapest Memorandum in 1994 that basically assured that Ukraine, for giving up its nuclear weapons, which was a pretty dangerous situation, that we collectively, with Russia, with England, I believe France also signed that, but certainly the U.S. did, we said we would assure their border integrity. And now, of course, one of the signatories of that memorandum, Russia, has blatantly and illegally invaded Crimea. And now it looks like they're bent on annexing it. And so we have to have a response to that. I'm not talking about militarizing or putting our combat boots on the ground, but if requested by Ukraine to offer some minimal assistance, to provide some assurance, and provide some pushback to Vladimir Putin, I think that's something we should consider. I said we should consider. So it's all in context of exactly what is happening at the time, and exactly what the government and the courage of the Ukrainian people, what that kind of dictates. I mean, these are some freedom-seeking people that protested for a corrupt-free democracy, which is they've had a real problem there. And with the type of pressure that Russia has been providing or putting on those fledgling democracies, I just think, you know, as fellow freedom-seeking people, we ought to provide that level of support.
The Russian government, Putin, have been saying, hey, there was a referendum in Crimea, overwhelming support for secession from Ukraine joining Russia. You don't buy that as an argument?
Well, first of all, it was a referendum that was implemented at the point of a gun. The only thing transparent was the ballot box that under Russian observers, people knew exactly how they're going to vote. Listen, I don't deny the fact that Crimea, the 2,000 people that populate Crimea, are you know, many of them are Russian leaning. But if that would have been a truly democratic result based on the Ukrainian constitution, where all Ukrainians would have, you know, had to decide that, it might have been a different result. But that's the way that process should have been played out, not under the type of illegal pressure that Russia brought into that process. It was just an utterly illegitimate process, which I think the UN, when they voted, was I believe it was 13-1 with China abstaining and Russia being the only no vote. I think that pretty well showed the world's opinion of what that referendum was. So that, in no way, shape, or form, does that show a legitimate result.
What are you hearing from your Senate colleagues since you got back from Ukraine and called for answering Ukraine's request for military aid?
Well, first of all, I believe the bipartisan Senate delegation that went over there. There are three Democrats led by Senator Dick Durbin, and our delegation was led by Senator John McCain. I think we were all moved, all sobered by the experience, and we want to be as united as possible in our support for the Ukrainian people. Now, we may have some minor differences. Again, I'm not talking about massive amounts of aid here. I'm just talking about a pretty modest level of support requested by the Ukrainian prime minister to help arm their hollowed-out military that was hollowed out by Yanukovych, who was pretty much what it appears to be is Vladimir Putin's puppet in Ukraine.
Go back to our callers now. We've got Dale on the line in Nina. Dale, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
Well, Dale,
I'd like to know how, since we're already trillions of dollars in debt as a country, I'd like to know how you can afford to do it. I'd love to help everybody in the world with all of their problems, but We can't.
I understand, but what I don't want to be is penny wise and pound foolish. And I think the cost of not showing strength and resolve, not coming to help defend a country like Ukraine, could be far more costly in the future if this thing actually does escalate. And again, I think the best way to prevent further escalation, further expansionary aggression by Putin, would be to show a minimal level of support. Again, we're just talking about all I was doing is responding to what the Prime Minister of Ukraine was requesting, was small arms and some ammunition to provide some level of support for really the courage of the Ukrainian people.
We'll be watching this Ukraine issue. I'm sure you will, too. While we've got you here, I'd like to ask a couple questions, if I may, closer to home. Some news this week. The Department of Justice asked a judge to dismiss a lawsuit you filed over coverage of congressional staffers through the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, saying that personal offense or indignation is not a legal basis to sue. So no basis to sue there. What do you make of that? Well, how do you respond to that?
Well, obviously, my legal team has a different opinion of my ability to obtain standing, and I thought it was interesting that the administration's response was primarily on the standing issue. They just wanted to just dismiss it. They have a very difficult time arguing the merits of my case because their executive order through Office of Personnel Management was a very political one. It's kind of hard for them to defend that special treatment for members of Congress. I really do think that we need to adhere to the principle of equal treatment under the law, and that's what they're unable to defend. So it was fully expected on our part. We'll respond on April 7th and hope that the judge will allow us to actually try our case on its merit in front of the court.
And then finally, your colleagues seem more and more optimistic that Republicans will have a good shot at taking control of the Senate in November. We don't have a say in that here in Wisconsin, no Senate elections here. What do you make of your chances, your party's chances at controlling the Senate next year?
Well, I think because the American people are seeing and feeling and experiencing, unfortunately, the real damage that's being done by the health care law and the fact that the Senate Majority Leader, goes to the floor of the Senate and in a very highly political manner, basically called certainly Wisconsinites that are feeling that pain and they're writing into us a bunch of liars. I mean, that's pretty outrageous, and I think it does certainly increase our chances to gain a majority in the Senate. But, I actually want to win a majority. I don't want to take the majority by the other side just losing. I think we need to show the American people what we're for, which is why I filed a bill called If You Like Your Health Plan, You Can Keep It Act. That'd be a true grandfather clause, and why I'm working with colleagues in the House to have a piece of legislation. I'd like to title it Preserving Freedom and Choice in Healthcare, that would actually repair the damage that's been done by Obamacare, try and limit and prevent future damage. So I think the American people deserve to be shown what we're for, and that's what I'm working hard to do.
Senator Johnson, thanks for joining us today.
Have a great day.
That's U.S. Senator Ron Johnson.